Mr. Foster duly told them of the growing embryo on its bed of peritoneum, made them taste the rich blood surrogate in which it fed, explained why it had to be stimulated with placentin and thyroxin, told them of the corpus luteum extract, showed them the jets through which at every 12th meter from 0 to 2040 it was automatically injected, spoke of those gradually increasing doses of pituitary administered during the final 96 meters of their course, described the artificial maternal circulation installed on every bottle at meter 112, showed them the reservoir of blood surrogate, the centrifugal pump that kept the liquid moving over the placenta and drove it through the synthetic lung and waste product filter, referred to the embryo's troublesome tendency to anemia, to the massive doses of hog stomach extract and fetal foal's liver with which, in consequence, it had to be supplied. Showed them the simple mechanism by means of which, during the last 2 meters out of every 8, all the embryos were simultaneously shaken into familiarity with movement. Hinted at the gravity of the so-called trauma of decanting, and enumerated the precautions taken to minimize, by a suitable training of the bottled embryo, that dangerous shock. Told them of the tests for sex carried out in the neighborhood of meter 200. Explained the system of labeling, a T for the males, a circle for the females, and for those who were destined to become free Martins, a question mark, black on a white ground. For of course, said Mr. Foster, in the vast majority of cases, fertility is merely a nuisance. One fertile ovary in 1,200, that would really be quite sufficient for our purposes, but we want to have a good choice. And of course, one must always leave an enormous margin of safety, so we allow as many as 30% of the female embryos to develop normally. The others get a dose of male sex hormones every 24 meters for the rest of the course. Result, they're decanted as free Martins, structurally quite normal. Except, he had to admit, that they do have just the slightest tendency to grow beards. But sterile, guaranteed sterile. Which brings us at last, continued Mr. Foster, out of the realm of mere slavish imitation of nature into the much more interesting world of human invention. He rubbed his hands. For of course they didn't content themselves with merely hatching out embryos. Any cow could do that. We also predestine and condition. We decant our babies as socialized human beings, as alphas or epsilons, as future sewage workers or future... He was going to say future world controllers, but correcting himself said future directors of hatcheries instead. The DHC acknowledged the compliment with a smile. They were passing meter 320 on rack 11. A young beta-minus mechanic was busy with screwdriver and spanner on the blood surrogate pump of a passing bottle. The hum of the electric motor deepened by fractions of a tone as he turned the nuts. Down, down. A final twist, a glance at the revolution counter, and he was done. He moved 2 paces down the line and began the same process on the next pump. Reducing the number of revolutions per minute, Mr. Foster explained. The surrogate goes round slower, therefore passes through the lung at longer intervals, therefore gives the embryo less oxygen. Nothing like oxygen shortage for keeping an embryo below par. And again he rubbed his hands. But why do you want to keep the embryo below par? Asked an ingenuous student. Ass! Said the director, breaking a long silence. Hasn't it occurred to you that an epsilon embryo must have an epsilon environment, as well as an epsilon heredity? It evidently hadn't occurred to him. He was covered with confusion. The lower the caste, said Mr. Foster, the shorter the oxygen. The first organ affected was the brain. After that, the skeleton. At 70% of normal oxygen, you got dwarfs. At less than 70%, eyeless monsters. Who are no use at all, concluded Mr. Foster.